First time at the Citizens Commission. Thank you so much for coming this evening. I know there are some competing interests that might be happening in the community, but we do appreciate your commitment and you being here. Unfortunately, we don't have Christy. There's a countdown that we'll all
That's
be
okay.
Well aware of what this is. But I'll start off with roll call. Ruben, since our regular chair is not able to defend in person, can you do chair duties this evening for us?
Yes, sir.
All right, well, we'll do roll call and we'll have to turn it over to start the meeting. Caroline.
Here.
Dave.
Here.
Marcy. Maxine. Mindy. Okay. Amy.
Here.
Okay. Susan.
Yeah.
Carl, is he with us?
Yes.
And
yes.
Dan?
Yep.
And Ruben.
Right.
We'll see.
Okay. It's been a little while, but welcome. And I call this meeting to order at 5:30.
You can if somebody has to second. We have to do the whole
second.
Okay, thank you.
Approval for last meeting
minutes.
Minutes.
I second.
Somebody move. You moved, Dan?
Yeah.
Somebody second. Okay. Okay.
Call from the audience.
So, any members of the audience would like to address the committee? You have 3 minutes. As you recall, no members of the committee can directly address your comments, but if they come up, we can agendize them for future discussion. Hearing none.
RPA next. What it means for first time.
Well, we come tonight with exciting news. So we have a fully funded First Avenue project. We're able to proceed as kind of best meets the needs of the project. So if you recall, prior to the RTA discussion, we were looking at establishing kind of a phasing plan with this advancement to 30%, which is the phase we're in now. So we've completed the 15%, the DCR, we're going to talk about that in a little bit. And we're now advancing to 30%. Through that effort, we were looking at coming up with different phasing plans based on the results of the election. You know, because some of the options that were before us would have been something like, you know, investing less where the needs are most critical, focusing on areas where there's going to be more ability to deliver. All of those conversations are now off the table. You know, we've gotten approved for $134 million. So everything is go, go, go on this project. So our next steps is we're taking this to 30%. We're still going to develop that phasing plan, and we anticipate that it will be a multi-phase project. As that shakes out, we'll, of course, bring back and communicate with this group. But I think our intention now is to kind of advance it in a way that's the most economically beneficial to the project. So the things are going to have the highest cost components of the project. Most likely the bridge is a single element and at most at risk of cost escalations in the coming year, be something where we would, you know, I think be beneficial to the community, beneficial to the project, and beneficial to the RTA's books to expedite and advance that. It also coincides with the area of the project that has the fewest identified conflicts at this point. So it opens up a lot of opportunities for us. Those decisions are still going to be ongoing and part of the discussions that we're going to be having with this commission. But for tonight, I think we can all celebrate and be excited that First Avenue is going to open. And there's one. Great news, great surprise. Does anybody have any comments on that? Any thoughts?
I have a There was a, you know, at one point, a gentleman in the tie said, I'm either going to move to Mexico.
Yeah, I can hear you. All right.
So with the bridge improvement, will that also include the intersection of Wetmore and First, which is going to be terribly impacted starting in August?
I think that'll be part of the discussion and determining where those kind of endpoints are. So that's kind of our next decision point, is if we decide to move that northernmost portion, kind of how much does it reason realistic and reasonable and beneficial to bite off at a single time as a single phase? So I think we want to draw those lines where we're not going to get bogged down with utility and right of way, which seems to be project drivers. North of Roger, north of Wetmore, kind of those areas are looking like there's good opportunity. It's not just going to be the bridge, most likely. It's probably going to be, the approaches and a segment that has utility to deliver as a single investment.
So you're saying that the bridge is going to be the first thing that's going to start?
Where we're looking right now, that looks like it has the greatest opportunity to make the most sense. We want to do the full evaluation, and that's going to be part of our 30% efforts over the next couple of months. We are going to be looking into that. But in terms of how things are aligning on the project, that is like the most probable course of action, but I don't want to commit anything at this time until we've done our due
Segregate the budget, because that could be something that had a lot of cost overruns. Yeah.
Continue to increase, and that budget would increase with that escalator, which is built into the administrative code. Rick, is there anything you want to add to that?
No, you're saying it perfectly. That's it. But that is the fix. A plus B plus C plus D plus E, whatever.
Yeah.
Lands on, you know, the answer. That's got to be it.
And there are specific metrics that we'll be looking at that we'll be using as those escalators that we'll be referencing against.
So are the various stages in this have a budget, so the bridge is one, and then the other areas have their own amount?
So within the preliminary submittal, we have done cost estimates for kind of an anticipation of what that phasing might look like. That might not ultimately align with what the delivery schedule looks like. So as we make that recommendation finally for that phasing plan, we'll come up with an associated budget or cost estimate for that phasing project.
So we have it broken. It's one big program, one big project, one big budget. We've broken into pieces and we'll refine that and kind of piecing together is the easy way to say it. But each piece will have a budget and then they'll all roll up into the whole.
Yeah.
And then so that's part of what we do when we look at this and the phasing. It's like easy example is the bridge. So say we were going from Wetmore all the way up to River. That's a little over a mile. That's a very costly piece because of the bridge. I don't remember what the numbers off the top of my head. I'll say $40 million. Right. So if we can do, if there's nothing in the way, and we can advance that piece and do it early, it's just simple economics. I mean, you can get kind of more bang for your buck. Whereas if we delay that and push that back, say we push it 2 or 3 years, well, $40 million at, you know, 3 or 4%. We typically model in like 3.5% for just escalation every year. After a few years, that $40 million project is now $50 million, and that hits that overall budget a lot more. So that's what we'll be doing, kind of piecing those things together, and then also working with the timelines that are associated with some of the stuff. So like, and we talk about like north of Roger, south of Roger, because that's kind of the dividing point where the right-of-way gets really wide. North of Roger, we have a lot of right-of-ways, so we have a lot of them to work with. South of Roger, it's very narrow right of way, so we have to acquire some of those pieces.
Right.
That takes time. Once that's acquired, we have to relocate. You know, TEP has a whole bunch of power poles and stuff out there. All that stuff has to get moved and relocated. So that takes time as well. So if we can do things, what we don't want to do is wait till all of that's done before we start. If we can do pieces together concurrently, I'm building the bridge. And while I'm building the bridge, I am going through and I'm getting all that right of way and I'm getting that TEP stuff relocated. At the same time, so as soon as I'm done building the bridge, then I can go and I can start building the second piece of it. That's the idea behind it in a very high level. But then So we'll have to do utility coordination, talk to all those companies, see like when can we get this work in, like when do we have to get this done? You have to, it's just a much bigger puzzle that you gotta piece together with all those.
So is there a possibility that you start on the big stuff and you start going down to the other areas that we're gonna run out of money?
We model all that. Like we build the financial plan around all of that, and we build in cost contingencies and risks and try to allocate that.
If you run short up on this, are you going to take something from these other areas?
The idea is we don't run short. So we have plenty right now.
The estimate that we put into RTA Next was very conservative on this project. But we've got quite a bit of cushion. We've also got that escalation built in case we continue to see cost increases. Yeah. The challenge with this, and getting to Brent's point, is that revenue for the last couple of years has not been tracking with cost escalation. Like the construction costs have far exceeded what the inflationary impacts are on the half-cent sales tax increase. So if the earlier we can build that, the more beneficial it is going to be to the overall project. We'll be in continued coordination and conversation with RTA because there is the overall RTA revenue and project. So we'll also have to be attentive to cash flow. We don't want to get out in front of collections. There'll be a number of competing projects in this first period. So those will all be things that we'll be having discussions with the RTA on and kind of in consideration of this project as a whole.
And we haven't talked about this, Patrick, so surprise to you.
All right, I'm ready for it.
I'm not sure if you've seen it, but the most recent. No, it's good news, good news. Most recent ADOT CCI came out for the last, I think, into 26, quarter four, and it's actually gone down.
Yeah, the first time.
And it plateaued, but it's actually construction costs have gone down. So we were seeing construction costs go up 30 to 40% a year, year over year since 2020, since all the COVID stuff. And then it kind of plateaued last year. It was still escalating, but it was a very flat rate, 3 to 5%, kind of back to traditional. And then the most recent quarter we have data for made out, it's actually going down, which is fantastic.
So the big elephant in the room is time frame. Start to finish, how have you parceled out these pieces and parts for it to be complete?
Good question. So we're on track with our original schedule. We wanted to have that DCR largely complete by the end of last calendar year, beginning of this year. That effort is done. All we're waiting to do is publish the report. So we are continuing to track to our original schedule. So that's really positive. Most of the big challenges are kind of behind us at that point. Going forward,
I have the schedule pulled up, or I've got it later in the slides just so we can talk about it. But I mean, I can't recall exactly what that shows. But once we get, so this 30% we're looking for later this summer, and then from that point, we'll break it based on what the most economically responsible phasing plan is. But that's the intent. And so if it's bridge, we can get to final bridge plans in 15 months, 18 months. And then it's a turnaround of getting it procured, going through pre-construction. We'd be mid-26, 30%, to 27. So, first part of 28, we could be building the bridge.
So that's not from river to grant. That's what I'm asking.
Oh, when is the whole thing going to be done?
Initially, I thought we were talking about it being complete by 2029. It's now sounding like that's not it.
Challenge with that is a lot of those constraints, we end up getting on somebody else's schedule. The city often prefers a willing seller. We're doing real estate. We don't necessarily like to acquire through condemnation or eminent domain. So oftentimes we can kind of get bogged down in the negotiation. So it becomes somewhat unpredictable. We're looking at 130.
All reports on 118.
118 parcels that we'll be negotiating with this project. So each one of those people kind of is going to be a discussion and ongoing communication. But we're hopeful if we get that first part moving in 2028 that we can have that second part to be 9:30. But it's all going to be contingent on what's happening with that right away.
He's got something to say. He wants to go faster.
Yeah. the discussion with the board at today's meeting is to have 40 grand projects starting by 2031. The RTA's deferred project, carryover projects. 2031. Yes, I grabbed my chest and I heard that too. Yes,
I live that long.
a lot of sweet mother of gods going around. So we don't know how, but the very things Patrick talked about, okay, how can we do that? We don't want, okay, we don't want a back forth sell. Okay, offer, don't accept, counter offer. Thank you. Moving on.
Agreed. I just want to say, in general, for your team and everybody else, thank you very much for all your time and efforts that you put into this particular project. It does not go unseen on my end, and I'm sure everybody else.
Thank you.
So thank you very much.
Yeah, I appreciate working with you.
We're all going to Mexico anyways.
2031.
All the audience is over.
Isn't what a margarita supply 2031 anyway.
That's good. That's a big lift. That is a big, because that's
you're not the first one that said that.
No, but it's
that'd be old.
We're gonna do our best, right?
I think to go along with that, I mean all things in jest, that means we're gonna try things we haven't tried. If you wanna hit goals you haven't hit, then you gotta do things you haven't done. And okay, what's that looking like? And we're starting to look at those. We're looking with our partners, we're gonna play a more active ball. So, okay, board said, there's a challenge. Okay, I nodded, hemmed, and hawed. Okay, challenge accepted. Now we'll see how we can do that and how we'll progress on that. So that's what you're going to see in here across the region. So it's that goal, it's that commitment, it's that effort. Good part is there's no fail. I mean, there's nothing bad about it. Imagine if every project left over plus all the other period one jobs did get done. Granted, that's a lot of construction. I don't know that I want to drive around a lot here, but
we have no experience with that.
Yeah, it is one of those, okay, hold my beer moment. So that's got a lot of incentive.
Well, speaking of that, are they going to fix the potholes on First Avenue before we get to 2031?
I think that's not good. If there are potholes, we can put those in for a 311 request. Absolutely, continue to. We aren't going to neglect potholes. What we're not going to do is we're not going to go out and repave, you know, put down a 3-inch overlay on the roadway. We will fill potholes. Those are immediate. But the pavement condition itself is going to be repaired with this project. Does anybody else have any more comments on this celebratory moment, or should we move on to the next item? This was just we just kind of wanted to give you guys an open forum. So we talked a little bit, Brent gave a presentation about the VCR at the last meeting, some of the content in it. We've now distributed it to this body. There was a request to have all of the public comments we received. So that's in your hand, phase two outreach. At this point, we are keeping the DCR, that 15% in documents, at a draft status because there's still a few things we got to get buttoned up. But we are going to get that posted live to show to the website to really show progress and transparency to the community that progress is being made on the project. A design concept report. So that was the document we sent out that kind of outlines the needs in the corridor, the critical decisions we've made to this point, the alignments, the alternatives we have been talking through. So that's the documentation of everything we've done in this process. We're just going to open it up to all of you. So it's still open for comments. I think we're locked in pretty much on kind of that design, that footprint. But if there's anything you all wanted to ask tonight, that you had any thoughts on anything that you read that we shared, I just want to open the floor and we can take that. And there's still opportunities for us to take comments in as we progress to finalize that DCR at our next submittal, which will again will be about July.
And I think this is one of those things that we can keep it. I'm going to be responding to Carl's comment online because you mentioned that. That's why Carrie was.
Okay. Oh, so that was some textures.
Did you mention? So I missed. Did you mention the track report and all that stuff?
Well, I haven't. That's a good point.
Is that
posted now?
Yeah, traffic port is posted, yes.
Also, the traffic port has not been posted on the website. I would encourage you to look at it. 533, the best pages that we've ever read. So kudos to
it's on there now.
Wonderful work. Really cool. Like, we were able to really go deep into some of that stuff early in the process and look at things in a different way, some different modeling in terms of how the roadway is going to operate under these different configurations. So we've documented all of that. It's available to the public. It's all of the presentations that you've all been seeing throughout this these series of meetings. It's all there now and all available. And really the point is to document, to show, and defend our decision-making as we move through this process and what's driving and determining the project. So it has the existing conditions, current traffic conditions, future traffic conditions, under a build and a no-build scenario. So that means it's when the project's done versus if we didn't do the project, a safety memo, the peer community case studies. That's all documented. That's all on the website. That's all available to you and anybody else in the public would love to see it. Great job, Felipe.
Oh, thanks.
If nobody has any comments or questions on this item, we can move on to the main event of tonight's meeting. And we'll leave this on, so if you have a chance and you'd like to look into the VCR ahead of the next meeting, or if you have any comments that come up in the meantime, reach out to us.
Email. Yeah.
Or we can make sure that we keep this as a standing agenda item if it would be at the desire of the Okay, so if you look through the comments, we noticed that one of the main kind of themes and topics that we received and a lot of input through that last phase of public engagement was talking about some of our intersection design, and in particular focusing on a lot of the channelized right turn options that we've been presenting in those early designs. And what we wanted to do is provide a presentation about some of the rationale behind that design decision. We talked about it previously in this committee and some of the thinking and the thought process about the alternative intersection configurations that are being proposed. But I don't think we went real deep into the research and kind of some of what the trade-offs and the alternatives are. So we wanted to do that tonight. One, to make sure we have it on public record, to be responsive to a lot of the comments that we received through this phase. And just to make sure that we're doing our due diligence, there was obviously a thought, kind of that sentiment in the community for some of the people who participated in this process. And what I will say, we don't know how many people that those comments represented. There are instances where we saw the same comment repeated up and down with the interactive map, and we anticipate, assume that that was probably the same person. But it was frequent enough in the data through this phase that we wanted to address it head on and kind of give a presentation and talk through that thought process on those channelized rights. So Felipe's done a deep dive on that. So he's got a presentation, and then I think we can open it up for discussion.
Awesome, thanks. Hi everybody, I'm here to talk about right turn lanes. And so, yeah. Thanks. So we're talking about right turn lanes. And I want to start first letting you know when we implement right turn lanes and what are the factors that we take into account. Overall, you know, we'll take a look at heavy right turn volumes, also heavy group volumes. Then we'll consider the speed, the railway speed, you know, that the railway has a very high speed. That might be more important to have a right turn lane compared to driving on the local street. Also, the operations, you know, that the queue lanes, the delay that cars doing right may, you know, trade on the roadway, the intersection. And also we can do that with taking into account, you know, heavy trucks, that may, you know, benefit from having a right turn lane. In this case, for first time, you know, we did a detailed analysis because this is a very important corridor that has some safety challenges. So we did analysis based on the theory complete street design guide. And that one takes into account, for analysis, we took into account future traffic volumes, respective 2045 right turn volumes, same as the through volumes, the posted speed on the road, also the roadway capacity. What will happen if we don't have a right turn lane? Is that going to back up? Is that going to increase travel time? That, you know, multimodal operations, because it's not the same when you have, you know, you may have a heavy right turn lane, and you may have, you know, very low pedestrian activity compared, like, you know, one of the intersections of the corridor with a heavy pedestrian activity. So that creates a lot of complexity. And also, of course, you know, the history, the safety, and the near-miss analysis that we need for the corridor. So based on that, the resources that, yeah, we're still proposing right turn lanes, but only a key specific locations. Because you know, Can we just put right turn lanes all over the place? Then we'll have all the channels that we'll see in a second. And so just to show you know that little example, for instance, on Fort Will, that we follow the city guidelines based on the complete street approach, based on the complete streets design that they had approached. And we took into account that this location has a very heavy right turn volume, same with the road volumes. Not having a right turn lane can imply, you know, can impact the travel time, the delay at the intersection. Also taking, you know, the near miss analysis into account, safety considerations. That's why this location we recommended a right turn lane. Another location and lane, taking, you know, those values into account, we don't need to have a right turn lane. Having a right turn lane over there can create another challenge. Next slide.
So real quick too, like on Glen, we had saved the space for the right turn lanes in case we needed it. And now that we know that we don't need those, we will be giving that space back.
So, but now we have, you know, options. Now that we have, you know, recommended right turn lanes at key locations, now the option is like, should we go with a traditional right turn lane? Should we go with a channelized right turn lane? There are, you know, two ways to weigh that movement. One, as you know, you're familiar with probably with this one. You can see you just have a stripe, a paper marking separating for the front movement. If you have to navigate, you know, find a gap between traffic and also with pedestrians. From the driver's perspective, if you're doing this movement, you are separated by an island with the traffic, and just from the driver perspective, and you have to navigate the pedestrian first. And then the final gap in traffic to merge later. But we know there's some challenges with what all of these, you know, options. So this is why I forgot to say that, but this is very important for this project because the near miss analysis that we did, we identified that particularly the east leg, the east crosswalk at Fort Lauderdale and first experienced significant amount of near misses between cars and pedestrians. So that's why I take this analysis. Now, I call it the right turn challenge. So, what we're trying to explain, you know, the difference, a little, you know, basic animation, hopefully, you know, to illustrate what are the challenges when somebody's driving. And I think this is important because both when I'm walking and driving, I see people that they don't pay attention. They're only trying to find a gap in traffic. They don't care about anything else. So I put this in a chart to illustrate that in cases, a standard right turn lane and a channelized right turn lane. So as you can see, the car is approaching the intersection, it's gonna make a right turn lane, and this view is an angle that's what's looking. There's a pedestrian here, but as soon as it approaches, you know, the intersection, it starts typically finding, try to find the gap in traffic, and then we have a conflict with that. On the other hand, with the channel right to lane, that person is looking at the crosswalk and then finding the pedestrian, stop it because, you know, it's in the view, and then proceed, you know, to cross over the crosswalk and then turn the head around to find a gap. So this is what we're thinking, the importance of, you know, selecting the right type of channelized or standard right to lane for this problem. Any questions?
Yeah, as the vehicle is approaching that channelized right turn, are they required to stop before the crosswalk or not? I mean, they could just go ahead and make a right turn and not observe whether there's a pedestrian stepping out.
Yeah,
so
that's correct. And that's what we're going to talk, you know, in the few more slides, how we can, you know, because if we just do it, the way it has been done in town and across the country, it's not going to work. You're going to have the challenges.
That's the way it is at Wetmore first.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, no, that's a good point. And you know, we're going to go over what kind of treatments we can add to make to avoid those challenges. So this is, you know, a photo from the near miss data analysis that we did. This is actually for the follow-up that if that I was talking. So it's a very common problem, challenge that we have to support. And something very important is to remind, you know, you guys put together the project goals, the goals for the project. And number one is to improve safety, provide transportation options, but also, you know, provide, maintain the mobility along the corridor. So based on that, we are also using the safe system approach. Probably you might, you know, remember this hopefully from a year ago when we discussed about safety. The Federal Highway has a new approach to enhance safety. That's called the safe system approach. And they have a design and they have different tiers. The first one they try to do is to remove the conflicts. You want to make the road safer, they try to remove those conflicts. The other one is to reduce the speeds. Because if you're hitting somebody, even two cars, at 60 miles per hour, the outcome is very different if that crash happened at 25 miles per hour. So that's what we can do to slow down traffic in an appropriate way. The third one is to manage conflict in time. That will work for like left turn arrows, proposed to have left turn arrows. So one movement goes first and then the second movement. And the fourth here in the safety system approach is to increase the awareness. Make things, you know, things more visible, more clear, like we're proposing to here with the channelized rise. So channelized right to left, so we can enhance safety. So again, you know, doing the channelized right to lane, what we're looking here, what we focus on animation, is we want to simplify the task for the driver maneuver over here. That is one step at a time. There, that the driver trying to navigate between a pedestrian and finding a gap, we're separating those two movements into conflicts, so it's one conflict at a time. Still, you know, we separate the through from the right to lane. It will can also help us to accommodate large vehicles like trucks. And that relates to, you know, the safety system approach, tier one, tier four. So everything that we're doing here is based on that, you know, that fair highway safe approach, when we're going to enhance safety, is connected to the goals of the truck. Questions? So you have a very, very, very good point, you know. I have your two examples of the existing channelized right through lanes in town. One is at Campbell and Rand, the other one is on First and Wedmore. So what do you see? What do you see beside, you know, what are the challenges?
Well, the biggest challenge with that one at Wedmore and First is that you've got, as you're making a right turn, it's very possible that people are making a left turn as they're heading north. They're turning onto Wetmore. So you're merging with that traffic. You've got to watch that traffic as they're turning left. And in the meantime, you might have a pedestrian walking in front of you. It's really nasty.
Yeah, you know, these are the traditional channelized right-wing ways that are, you know, getting down and across some location of the concrete. And that creates a challenge.
And that merge lane is not very long, so.
Yeah, but so, you know, right. Change it to the long one. But yeah, those are some of the challenges. Same, you know, when you're walking and you're trying to cross, cars are driving too fast. And then, as you say, when they try to merge, they're driving too fast, as soon as they stop.
Well, and as you're heading south on First Avenue, there are cars merging into the right turn lane to go into that driveway up there, as well as to go into the channel right turn. And there are cars coming out. There's also an exit space in between there for cars coming out. It's crazy. It's just crazy.
I believe the problem in merging in there is that people get confused that they don't stick to staying. If you're making a left-hand turn onto Wetmore, they do the full line
right
instead of staying in their own left lane.
Yeah, probably
you know?
Went to one
and then that creates a problem to the merging car as they're approaching, and then they have to stop, and it gets confusing who's going to go first. As I've seen it, and I've even had to stop because they don't understand who has the right of way in the merging.
And it's a yield control or stop? I didn't say
it's yield.
Yeah, it's a yield because it's its own lane.
So, exactly. So, you know, you're right, you're going to be required to go to a full stop. So, It's just removing and those are the challenges that we have for you. And that's what we put together this presentation. To go to the next. So, some of the challenges that vehicles speak are too fast, trying to deal and trying to find a gap. We have multimodal conflicts, cars are driving too fast, hard for the pedestrian to find a gap to safely cross the right lane. And then, it's consistent, they have to yield, or it's just complicated. So the points that you're making, they have been recorded at a professional level. With this, the old ways that we used to do this type of things. So, if you can, So one of the comments that we heard from the committee, one of the members indicated, that in addition to that, the things that we showed on the previous slide, is that the increase by having a channelized right lane, pedestrians are going to have to walk more the pavement. And so, we did a quick calculation and said, if you have a condition like this, now that with the distance that you're going to be walking on pavement, it's going to be longer, greater than if you were just walking across the traditional parking lane. So, there is a little bit of higher exposure by walking a longer distance. But, something I want to talk to that's a longer exposure, but also might imply a higher risk because the animation that we just saw that people are not paying attention to this thing as well. So, sorry, this came out a little bit, but that's what we're talking here, that, you have a longer distance compared to a standard, but again, the distance, but then you have also higher risk.
So, I want something to say.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. Is that longer distance between the islands that you have channels, or is that from the sidewalks?
No, it's from the sidewalk. So, you have the island to stop. You can do it in multiple stages. So, it's not a continuous exposure. So it's a good point. So you have the islands to stop, fight for the gap in traffic or signal to tell you to proceed. So, but this is something very, very important. All what we have, the comments that we hear and that what we've seen is based on the old the way channelized right of lanes were designed throughout the past. Recently, a few years ago, NCHRP, a research study, evaluated something called the smart geometry, smart channelized right turn lanes. You see what happened when you tweak the design to make it smarter, make it safer. What they found out is very promises that daily channelized or the new channelized right turn lane can be as safe as the standard as not having a right turn lane, even better than a typical right turn lane. And some of the reason is that they were able to figure out to play with geometry, to add equipment, to slow down traffic, to clear conflicts, and make it safer, make it better. So this is very cool that, there was a study that investigated what happened when you enhance the conditions on the channel. Then we have a couple of examples.
I just want to draw the attention to the statistic on this. I think it's very powerful. So the channelized right turn lane actually sees 70 to 80% fewer crashes as a standard conventional right turn lane, which I think is the driving kind of impetus for why we're pursuing that in the project, particularly at those intersections where we saw a lot of near misses, where we know that right turning conflict is pretty significant. Wetmore, Fort Lowell are two of the highest pedestrian crash intersections in the city. So this design performs as well as not having a right turn lane, still getting the equal amount of capacity through that intersection and kind of breaking up those conflicts. So it's hugely kind of successful and powerful tool of way to design this intersection.
So this is, thanks, Patrick. So this is very important. And so a couple of examples that have one in Texas. You can see the old geometry, high speeds, difficult for pedestrians to cross, car for her, what they did is like they changed the condition, changed the angle to make it to slow down traffic, to change the geometry, that degree of angle to enhance safety. And they did a study, and they found a reduction in 40% making crashes by making the change. So they made the change, they compared the crash data before, the crash data after, and they saw some benefits. So, and that's to your point that, you know, when they're not, the way they were designed previously, some challenges. The new design makes things a lot better.
Can I ask, is it doing it in geometry?
Yeah.
Is it doing it because the more swooping one on the left, you don't have to slow down, you can just back all the way around.
Even if you have a stop sign, but the geometry is like, yeah.
And is it the other one, it's almost like separating the right turn, and then you have to do a more typical angle, so you got to slow down for your, okay.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. Because if you're a pedestrian, you're standing in an area that the approaching right turn car is going to see you better than the one on the right than on the left. And as it makes the turn, it's going to have a longer approach to merge, which means that they're viewing, you know, to the left of them for oncoming traffic. They're way past the possibility of hitting a pedestrian. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And you'll notice on the one on the left as well, and that's how a lot of them are in town, is it's a right turn, but they can really go into their own lane. Like, I mean, that was designed for high speed. That right turn just is its own lane, and you have to work over. Whereas the one on the right, where it's modified, you don't have that. As a car, you have to stop, yield, and then merge into the through traffic. So it's reinforcing. I mean, you have to slow down and take that.
Now, is there enough? Sorry.
In the way,
is there enough land at Port Lowell and the Wetmore intersections to do that one on the right? Or
that takes a lot more space. So we have another example in Peoria, Illinois. They have a similar configuration. They went ahead, they made another photo, but they made a change, and they did that, you know, before and after all their crashes, and they have, you know, around 60% reduction in crashes. And this is what you say, because, you know, at the end, you know, we can put a stop sign, but if you have, you know, the geometry, it's like, you know, it's kind of encouraging you to go fast. Exactly. But if you help with some geometry, that makes sense.
I thought about how the angle of this forces your head to go this way instead of this way to burn. That's tricky.
So, going back to the types of options that we have for the project, we have a standard right to lane. One, we have the traditional channel life right turn lane, green lane. The one that we have first, and we have the smart channel. You know, that is based on that. You know, what we just discussed. Mm-hmm. So we have the three, you know, options that we have. This is the one that we're, you know, that we would like to proceed to make it a smart, you know, natural research that just started the control. So comparing those three, you know, they have an island. The standard doesn't have, but I would say they do speeds. You know, you can see how the traditional channel right to lane, but that's faster. You know, with the smart channels, if using the geometry and the angle, speed is lower. Conflicts, you know, you have that which over on the animation, you have more conflicts because you're looking for traffic on the left, looking for the pedestrian crossing. Versus the smart channel, when you have the pedestrian in front of you, and then you reverse. Same with the focus, making the task for the driver maybe a little easier. I think nowadays that there's many people on cell phones and getting distracted. So having first step by step navigating the crossbow and the firing guard. We can also talk about food major, you know, signal timing. We're talking about using a timing and increased capacity at intersections. Most of the times, so some of the times, the signal timing are based on the distance. Because based on fire regulations, you have to time the signals to accommodate the distance at 3.5 feet per second. So when you have a pedestrian crossing, you have to calculate the ring time either for the number of cars on the road or the time that it's going to take a person to walk at 3.5 feet per second, that's very slow, all the way to the outside of the intersection. And what's happening nowadays is that the walk time is longer than the vehicle time because of that condition. So by removing or by putting that the channelized right-turn lane, having that angle, having the raised island, that will also help with the timing, make the intersection operate more efficient.
Because the push button for the crosswalk is going to be in the island, not on the other side of the slip lane. So now you're timing from the island to island, which is a shorter distance. You don't have the time for that right turn lane. Whereas in a traditional lane, you've got that extra 11, 12 feet plus the bike lane that you've got timing at 3.5 feet per second.
In that island, at the specific size of that island, and I know that there was a small conflict in my conversation in the previous meetings. What does that pose for homeless stand there, or with a sign? Because there's got to be traffic on the other side. You guys got to be waiting for us for a stoplight, right? So what will that pose?
I'm not sure about an answer, but the island is relatively small.
Okay.
So you know, relatively small. We have room for the pedestrian and the wheelchair and the travel is comfortable, find the crosswalk. But also we want to have signal poles, signal equipment. So there's not gonna be that much room to, you know. The roadblock, they look big, but you know
they look big, that's why I mentioned.
You're not gonna stop them.
Yeah.
Oh no, I can't run this much
space.
Yeah. Right, again, you know, it's almost the standard they can.
Yeah.
It's not like a couple.
Yeah.
You can look at the ones that we have in this area around town. I mean, how often do you observe that behavior? We would expect the same sense of behavior in this design. And I don't, that's going to be the driving factor in the design decision.
Right.
Based
on the smart turn. Is there enough space in case you've got two or three cars backed up to make a mistake? You have to be more careful when you're merging, right? There are like two or three.
Yes.
They won't back up into.
No, there will be enough room.
Correct. So there's, I mean, just schematically,
that will expand.
Yeah. So, but between the crosswalk and the road you're going into, there's enough space for a vehicle to sit and wait in there. The crosswalk, and then we can tune them up as far as we need to back up the road for them.
Because they're going to have me waiting for the opportunity to learn.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That I'm on every day when I'm going east on Grant Road and I'm going south on Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really like that. But some people don't understand that there is a lane there to go. And then, you know, people are sitting there waiting. But let's see. So there's a short crosswalk from that southwest corner, and then it goes over a little bit to another little spot, and then they have to cross over to Grant Road.
Okay.
So how will that be? There's not a button or anything to push for that, is there?
At this point, no. At this point, you know, we're talking about lights. We're proposing to have a race crosswalk, a perfect signing, but that's the input that, you know, we wanted to get at this meeting. So there may be other, you know, techniques that we can bring in all cases.
I get so is it, it's going to be a yield sign instead of a yield sign, not like a stop sign, and that's
it's going to be a stop, you know, we're working on the sign, but I like the stop sign.
Okay, so yeah, it would be like a stop, not like, because I'm just wondering, even if it's yield, people still
Even we discussed, geometry plays a good factor, but it has to be a combination of geometry in that appropriate science. So I think like the distance.
And then my second unrelated, what does this look like for having like the bike lane?
Later.
Okay, perfect.
That's the green one.
So, like the driver that didn't know that there was a lane he could go into and he's waiting. Could there be like a yellow turn signal during that time for him to proceed into the lane?
Typically, that's done with some signage, a sign to tell that, there is a lane that they can merge. In this case, we don't have something like that because we won't have an extra lane. So it's going to be, like Chagwan and Campbell, like you won't have an additional lane. You will have to find a gap in traffic.
No, because that lane, it's a third lane.
Right. Over there, yes. But no mile first.
Okay, got it. Okay, thank you.
So over here, we'll talk about it very quickly. So, we'll talk about the geometry, how important we can the geometry to improve the road speeds, generalize right to lane, that can help us reduce conflicts, can be safer for pedestrians based on the research, we went over, and also can enhance, we have something over here that the questions, that can be, can be signed in, it can be like those flashing signals that we have, the rapid flashing beacons, well, there are the drivers, there's a pedestrian crossing. There are some things that we can be added, to better inform drivers that, pedestrians are crossing. Because, we're doing our best to say, hey, the sea over here, but still connected. So that doesn't lie. The only thing I want to mention is that we've been using this method approach, we want to continue to use it. Something from the Tennessee Department of Transportation, there's kind of a flag, it's like Franklin. What we're doing is mapping all the vehicle paths, pedestrian paths, bypass, identify conflicts. When we identify those conflicts, we're trying to find the solutions to how we can enhance, minimize those conflicts. In case of a vehicle index, we're trying to score, and based on that score, can be a yellow, green flag, maybe a yellow flag, or a red flag. If we have a red flag, we have to go back and find a solution. We want to assess something. So in the case for the channel right to lane, so that's we'll start looking at the Iowa and say, hey, the corner right there, the radius that right there, at the curve, can make a difference. We saw that in the previous slide, if that's very long, I can encourage high speeds. So the travel path width is something very important. If you assign a lane that is 20 feet wide, versus 12 feet wide, that can make a difference how drivers approach the location. That crosswalk location, you mentioned that, is very important. Where to have that crosswalk so that there is visible. And traffic control measures, it can be, we can have some beacons, some flashing things to make the pedestrian even more visible. So that, the key mitigation is, have to reduce speed, using geometry, style and race crosswalk, that can be one solution. I mean, stop control or something, and locate crosswalk to change that location. So that's the part, we're going to continue to use this framework so we can maintain that consistency of design across the
area. Can we have the data from the pedestrians hit near misses now? So when this is all implemented, we show 40% reduction.
Yeah. And so, these are the treatments that when it's coming, how do we make it that smart? This is an example of another location in Oregon, I think. They have a race crosswalk. So the pedestrians are more visible. It also helps the cars, you see a race crosswalk, improve the geometry, but we're going to help, help the slow down people when they're making the right turn. The other thing, is that difficult to see, but it's an apron. I was discussing this road, First Avenue, we have rocks here today for the city. And so when a car is turning, it's their space, but when a large truck is making the right turn, it has to be, wider, bigger. And so If we just accommodate, you know, we have to figure out a way to accommodate trucks in a way that doesn't encourage vehicles to speed. Because so what the idea here is that if you're a car, go over here, the little space. But if you're a truck, if you need more space, you go over this apron. The trucks are bigger, you can just jump over, go over here. I guess, you know, cars can go over too, but they have to slow down. So that makes it not exactly. So we're going to be using these kind of configuration approaches, treatments, to make sure that we're making a smart channel, not a traditional channel. Back to the question about the bike lanes. So one of the things that we're considering is to provide two options. Because no matter what, if we have a traditional right turn lane, smart channel, we're going to have a conflict when cars, bikes, you know, the range of the bike, we're going through, and cars are going to have to cross over for the right turn lane. And so the idea here, one of the concepts that we're exploring, is to provide two options. One is to provide a ramp so they can go on top of the sidewalk. We'll make the sidewalk wider, a chair pad, all the way to the intersection, but we can also provide the option for more experienced riders that can continue that path to go up. So we'll have two options, and then what you do, if I don't have it here, then you cross on the race crossbow you buy, go back to that island, you know, and as you know, we can accommodate more kind of the bike activity on the car. So that's
I'm just curious, like, especially with these lanes, based on kind of what we have from the data, is there going to be a lot of backup now that we're putting a stop sign and slowing down on some of these turns? Is there going to be, I don't know, I don't like.
We're doing the analysis. We've made that. We're
thinking
where that two lane doesn't spill out into conflict.
So I was just thinking, it would be nice. It's nice to have that option because I can see that whole bike lane completely blocked, especially,
yeah.
You know, just because, yeah, it's probably just certain points, but I didn't know if we, for certain intersections, if we knew there was.
Yeah, no, we're, you know, we're using the 2045
yeah.
Analysis. And so one thing that, you know, 50% to make sure is that we're at 15.15, 15% aside. Somebody mentioned, like, hey, it's like quite more right way. Yeah, that's something that we have to evaluate. What are they going to be the right way impacts? And yeah, that's the weird part of the goal is to minimize property impacts, particularly with people with buildings. Another important aspect is drainage. There's a lot of water, you know, rainfall this corridor. We want to make sure that everything works and we'll have, you know, rain event. But utilities are important. Like you mentioned, TEP, you know, everything has to work. There's, you know, underground utilities, there's, you know, water, sewer, communication that we have to make that everything work together. And another important aspect outside of this, you know, the cycle phase are pedestrians with a pipeline, have a visibility, requirements that we need to take into account. Because if you channelize right to lanes, it makes more difficult for a person to address them with a kind of disability across the road. So we acknowledge that, we understand that, we're looking for ways to help that process. So we want to assign for everybody. So here's an example, you have 50% design, it's gonna take more right away. This is for law. Southbound, we'll take more railway. It's just gonna actually put a parking lot. It's getting very close to this building. So those are, you know, some things that we're still working on right now. That's how, you know, we're proposing these. We have good reason to propose a channel direct lanes, but we also have to keep this, you know, expanding.
Yeah, I think if you recall, so these are already laid out with that same geometry, that smart channelization, I like that term, so let's stick with that. And they're wide enough to accommodate trucks, and these are laid out appropriately, and we have them just everywhere where we needed them or where we wanted to put them initially. And that's because that's that larger footprint. So now as we go through this refinement,
Felipe mentioned Fort Lowell a bit on the corner of the lighting. It fits in great, except it takes like 25% of their parking lot. Right. So that needs to become now a conversation with them is if, you know, are we really gonna put in the right this channelized turn? If I could put it in standard lane, then I don't impact them and I think they can keep the highway. Maybe that's the better solution. Standard one at that location. But we've got it laid out and we know it works, we know it fits. Whereas other places across the road at the Circle K, we know that there's a lot of people crossing there, and that's a very good place to put that. So we have them in everywhere. We needed them initially, and then, or where we need right turns initially, and so then we'll, that's a larger footprint, we're being conservative, and then there's a few that may come. But it's primarily that right of way and managing that other part of the project, minimizing the overall impact.
There's nothing keeping you from eliminating the smart right turn at Northwest Lighting, but keeping the one.
Exactly.
That, yeah. So.
Yep. Yep. So, and that's why I like that example is Northwest, we can just put in a standard right turn lane and not impact the business. They can stay and we're not hurting them. It still gets the right turn lane. But then on the other side, Caddy Corner can get improvement.
Thank you. All that, the totality of the evidence is the recommendation of the project team that we proceed as designed and continue to iterate on those channelized right turn lanes. You know, we saw those comments, we wanted to be responsive to them, but given the totality of the evidence, we still feel like this is the best configuration for this project. We're not seeking, you know, any sort of vote or endorsement tonight, but we wanted to bring this matter to your attention, hear your comments and thoughts, and of course, we'll always be having a dialogue as we advance this, but we can continue to be a conversation.
So, yeah, a lot of comments were concerned about slip lanes, but I think there's a lot of nuances when it comes to them. That's okay. Like, basically, they were just thinking of, like, the accelerated on-ramp, basically, versus, like, the stop, like, they, which probably just wasn't totally, I wouldn't know that either. So that's kind of where the main comments were from. Okay.
You know, we can't know fully what was in somebody's head, but our interpretation of those comments.
Yeah, that was mine too. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Basically, we're not going to redo what's already at Wetmore.
Right.
Yeah.
Really simplify it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any other comments, questions, concerns? So, real quick, schedule update. That's what we had last time, and. We show starting construction at the end of 20. This is our original the way we laid it out for the program, and so I feel like we're right on track, 30% below this year, and then construction late 28, starting construction. Rick wants this all done in 5 years, so I feel like we're. I mean, he's got us money, so we got to listen.
I was gonna say.
So he turns it off.
134 million reasons.
We are, this is what we had initially proposed a long time ago. We felt like this was reasonable. We do feel like we're on track. We got a lot of big lifting, a lot of work to do to get to that, but that's where we're at. Were you the one who asked initially on the schedule?
Oh, yeah. Well. That was already addressed.
Yep. Okay.
And again, that construction start was that first phase. You know, we were still unsure about the phasing period, but that's kind of what we're looking at. You know, taking the bands out or depending on how it shakes out.
And then part of that phasing two will also be an evaluation of alternative delivery. Like traditionally, the city likes that. It's the traditional delivery method, design, bid, build. Other jurisdictions, other places, they'll do different delivery methods, design build, where get to a certain portion of your design, and then you get the contractor on board and design and construct at the same time. City doesn't really like to do that, but I think that's all kind of fair game. There are certain things that make those alternative deliveries advantageous, or actually can really hurt you if you're not ready for them, delivery. So that's part of that, looking into all those aspects as well. That's just that. So where we are at, my team now, I showed this. This was two slides last time. The green is what we are doing like today, is we're adjusting all the city staff comments on the DCR DAP report we finished here, and we'll post that online. You guys have already seen it, but there were a few little minor comments that came out of that. And then Felipe and his folks are looking at the street lighting and traffic signals. They're laying all that out, so we get that footprint. And then we've gone through some detailed stuff with the city and actually kind of just got approval on it yesterday. So everything else that's not green, we are starting like next week, first week. We're just going to help everybody on it and go as quick as we can. So and then it's just all is going to work together. And then I did bold that phasing and delivery. That's one of the biggest discussions that has to happen. We're going to be very busy as a design house here.
So we'll have more information at our next.
Yeah, we should. Depends on when that meeting is, but yeah.
Isn't that at every meeting?
There will be a lot of progress. We'll be going very fast for about 30%. And then this is always, you know, is there anything else we would like to, you guys would like to talk about to put on future agendas? It's kind of that open to discuss. Other questions, comments, concerns, anything that you've seen or read or
no, but okay, thank you.
Stash someplace.
Well, thanks, go with
$130 million for this project.
Skim the 33 or the 3 off.
Yeah. To Mexico.
That's my Mexico fund. Yeah. Budget just got whacked.
That was all we had for tonight. So thank you, Ruben.
I make a motion to adjourn.
I have one more. Sorry. Do we know when the next meeting is going to be? Have we decided, or we just made it by year?
We're still not scheduled monthly. We'll notify you 2 weeks out if we decide if we have additional information to share. What we want to do is be respectful of your time. We don't necessarily want to continue if we don't feel like we have substitute.
So just going to be case. 1 month, 5 months.
Yeah, we've got it.